Thanks a lot to the organizers for putting together this conference and inviting me to give a talk. And today I'll be talking about some recent work with Annie Wei and Yejian Zhou. Annie and Yejian are also in the audience, so please feel free to ask some questions as well. Okay, so today I want to talk about a question related to multipartite entanglement in the vacuum state of a CFT in two dimensions. And before doing this, let me review some more familiar facts about bipartite entanglement in this setup. So bipartite entanglement is studied using the entanglement entropy. So if we have some pure state psi in some system and we divide it into two parts A and B, then the entanglement entropy quantifies bipartite entanglement in the following very precise way. That if I consider all possible local operations and classical communication in the regions A and B, then there's some maximum number of Bell pairs that I can extract out between these regions, and that is exactly equal to the entanglement entropy. Okay, so it has a precise operational interpretation. And the entanglement entropy has been calculated in a variety of physically interesting setups. One such setup is the vacuum state of a conformal field theory in 1+1 dimensions, where you can look at the entanglement entropy of a single interval, and it has this simple and universal formula. Okay, so in particular, this formula depends only on the central charge and the size of the region and the UV cutoff. And it teaches us many important things about the entanglement structure of the vacuum state. So in particular, this UV divergence reflects that there is a very large amount of entanglement at short distance scales in the theory, such as the edges of the interval A. It also grows with the size of the region, which reflects that there is entanglement present at much longer length scales. And one very useful thing about this is that it's the same formula for any conformal field theory, independent of its operator content, which is why it has been useful for various applications, such as identifying a C function, which behaves monotonically under RG flows in any 2D QFT, and for identifying a bulk dual of this quantity. Okay, so today I'm going to propose a quantity associated with multiple regions in the ground state of a CFT, which is also universal and has a clear operational interpretation. Okay, so the setup that I'll consider is, again, consider the vacuum state of a 2D CFT and consider three adjacent regions, A, B, and C in it. So we have the reduced density matrix on these regions. And a naive model that we could construct for the correlations in this state based on this formula for the entanglement entropy that I showed to you is that it has some short distance entanglement among the regions A and B and C. And then there's also some longer range entanglement, such as some Bell pair-like entanglement between A and C. Okay, the multipartite entanglement structure has been probed using a variety of different quantities, including the negativity, mutual information, and reflected entropy. And in particular, by studying the reflected entropy, it's possible to see that this bipartite entanglement structure between the different regions is too naive. Okay, so there is some significant multipartite entanglement, but the operational meaning of many of these measures is not well understood. So in this talk, I would like to address the question of to what extent are there correlations in this state between A and C that are mediated by the region B. Okay, and in particular, in this simple model, there are no such correlations which are mediated by B. And to make this question more precise, I would like to consider the following operational setup. So suppose you start with the state rho ABC, and then you trace out the system C, so you're just left with a reduced density matrix on AB. Okay, and now you want to act with some non-trivial quantum channel, which acts only on the region B and takes you from B to BC. Okay, so then by doing this, you can construct some other state rho tilde ABC on the union of these three systems. And we can ask, how close is this reconstructed state to the original state rho ABC? One thing you can convince yourself of is that such Bell pair-like correlations between A and C could never be reconstructed by doing a map of this kind. Okay, so this is a way of proving this question about the correlations being mediated by B. And before considering this question in general, let's just ask a first question about whether there are any setups in QFT where this reconstruction can work perfectly. So rho tilde ABC can be exactly equal to rho ABC. And such a setup was identified a while ago by Cassini and Huerta. So again, take the CFT vacuum state and take B to be a region, an interval on a spatial slice, and take A and C to be null regions on either side. So in this setup, you can deduce that the recovery operation that I described on the previous slide works perfectly. And the way you do this is by looking at a quantity called the conditional mutual information of A and C conditioned on B. Okay, so this is defined as this particular combination of various entropies, which are all single interval entropies in this case. And you can use the relativistic invariance of the theory together with the formula that I wrote down on the first slide to see that in this setup, the conditional mutual information vanishes. Okay, and it was shown in any quantum mechanical system that the vanishing of the conditional mutual information is equivalent to being able to perform the recovery operation that I described perfectly. And in fact, there is even an explicit channel for doing this, which is called the PETS map, which is defined in this way by acting on both sides of the input with rho b to the minus 1/2, and then acting with rho bc to the 1/2. Okay, so when the conditional mutual information is zero, like in the setup, then this rho tilde abc is exactly equal to rho abc. But in this talk, I would like to consider a different setup where you consider three adjacent intervals on a spatial slice, in the ground state of the CFT. And we can take the lengths of these regions to be arbitrary and define a cross ratio as this ratio of the lengths. Okay, so in particular, the cross ratio goes to zero as you take the intervals very far away from each other, as you take A and C very far from each other, and goes to one as you take them to be very close. So the conditional mutual information is now non-zero and is given by this simple expression in terms of the cross ratio. But we can now ask, so because it's non-zero, we know that we can no longer carry out the recovery operation perfectly. So can we still use the conditional mutual information in the setup as a quantitative measure of the extent to which the recovery works? And to some extent, the answer is yes. So it was shown, again, from general quantum information theoretic reasoning, that if you consider a slight generalization of the state that I wrote on the previous slide, in that now it has these extra plus I lambda over 2 and minus I lambda over 2 in the exponent for some real number lambda. Then if you consider the maximum over lambda of the fidelity between rho ABC and rho tilde ABC, this has a lower bound in terms of the conditional mutual information. Okay, so in particular, in the regime where the intervals A and C are far apart, this cross ratio goes to zero, and you can so the conditional mutual information approaches zero, and this inequality gives a strong bound in that case. So you can say you can see that it approaches one. So the fidelity is a measure that's equal to one if the states are identical, and it's equal to zero if the states are orthogonal. Okay, so but if we consider a more general setup where the conditional mutual information is large, then this bound doesn't really have a lot of content. So if we want a direct quantitative answer to the question that I mentioned, then we should directly evaluate something like the fidelity between rho and rho tilde. Okay, so that is one of the things that we do in this talk, and we also looked at other distance measures, such as the relative entropy and the trace distance, to build a more robust picture of the differences between these states. In all cases, we're going to use the explicit two-walled PETS map that I wrote down. And the strategy that we'll use is a replica trick. So we express each of these distance measures as a four-point function of twist operators on some integer number of copies of the system. Two of the things that I want to highlight at this stage are that each of these distance measures turns out to be independent of the UV cutoff. So it's a well-defined quantity in the continuum limit. And despite being a four-point function, it actually turns out to be universal with respect to the operator content of the CFT and depends only on the central charge. Okay, so we'll use the OPE to also find the behavior analytically in the eta going to one limit where the intervals are closed. And another thing we can do is that because we know that this is a universal function, we can evaluate it in any CFT on the lattice, which we do. And that gives us the function for all values of eta. Okay, so one thing that we find is that the fidelity calculated explicitly turns out to be better than the lower bound from the CMI in all cases. And finally, I'll talk a little bit about how we can also use similar approaches to address a more qualitative question about the difference between these states. So we know that there's some distance between them by these measures, but how are they actually different? So what is the correlation between A and C or A and B in the reconstructed state? Okay, so the plan will be to first briefly explain the twist operator method that we use for one particular quantity. It's similar for all the different quantities. And then I'll summarize the numerical results for the fidelity and relative entropy and discuss how we derive the OPE limits, and finally discuss the qualitative differences between these states. Okay, so let me start by briefly discussing the replica trick. Okay, so the fidelity is defined as this function of two different density matrices. It's a measure of how well you can distinguish them. And it's not entirely obvious, but it's possible to convince yourself that it can also be expressed as rho sigma to the power of 1/2, which allows us to define a replica trick where you raise this thing to the power of k, and then hopefully when you evaluate it from integer k, you can analytically continue to k going to 1/2. Okay, and then the definition of the 12th PETS map had many powers of minus 1/2 plus Islander and plus 1/2 plus Islander, and so on. So we're also going to use a replica trick for each of these. Okay. So then we can write down some object that we want to calculate, which involves powers of various reduced density matrices on some, and involves some integer number of copies of the state. Okay, and our hope will be that we'll get some expression in terms of these parameters, which can be analytically continued to find the answer for the fidelity. Okay, so so the way that you calculate an object like this for an integer number of copies is that you can give a Euclidean path integral representation for each of these states, and then this quantity tells you some way in which you should glue together the states on the regions A, B, and C, and you get some different permutations in the regions A, B, and C, which tell you how to glue it together. So this is a more complicated version of the replica trick that is used for the Reni entropies. And when you do this, you can also see what happens when you go around in a circle around any of these endpoints of the intervals, and that lets you identify this complicated path integral with a four-point function of some twist operators, which are placed at the endpoints of these intervals. Okay, so you can work out what these permutations are. They involve composing the permutations inside the individual intervals. And these twist operators are defined by the fact that when you go around in a circle, anti-clockwise around them, then you go from the ith copy of the field to the tau ith copy. Okay, so this gives us some expression of the fidelity as a four-point function. So the twist operators that you have in this four-point function are all primary operators, and their dimensions can be read off in a standard way from the cycle structure of the permutations. Okay, so in general, if you have m cycles of these lengths, then you have this following explicit formula for the dimension. And one thing we can observe is that if we plug in the cycle structure of the twist operators appearing in the fidelity, then all of these dimensions will go to zero in the replica limit. So one consequence of that is that there's some overall factor that needs to be included in this correlation function in general to cancel the dependence on the UV cutoff. But when the dimensions of these operators go to zero, this factor which cancels the UV cutoff just becomes one, which indicates that the fidelity is already independent of the UV cutoff. Okay, and this should surprise us a little bit because the expression that I wrote down for the 12 PETS map was made up of reduced density matrices on various regions. And if we consider like the simplest possible combination of reduced density matrices that we might want to approximate the state with, something like rho A tensor rho BC, then this will fail very badly. And in particular, this kind of state will fail to capture the very large amount of entanglement at short distance scales in this state. So it will go to zero as you take the continuum limit. Okay, but in contrast, we find that the fidelity is actually some finite number in the continuum limit. And this tells us that somehow the combination of reduced density matrices in rho tilde is a very clever combination which is able to capture all the short distance entanglement structure of the state. Okay, so then the second interesting thing I wanted to emphasize was that that this quantity turns out to be universal in any 2D CFT. The way to see this is that you can write any correlation function of twist operators, such as this. You can evaluate it by finding a map from the base space on which the fields are multiple valued because of the presence of the twist operators to some covering space on which the fields become single valued. And then the path integral on the base space with these twist operator insertions is equal to the path integral on the covering space without any operator insertions. But instead, the non-trivial twist operators are encoded in the geometry of the covering space. Okay, so in general, the covering space can have some non-trivial genus. And there is a formula for the genus of the covering surface in terms of the cycle structure of the permutations. So for the particular permutations which correspond to the fidelity, we can just plug in those cycle structures into the Riemann-Hurwitz formula. And we find that the genus of the covering surface is zero. Okay. So it's zero not just in the replica limit, but for any values of these parameters. So because the genus is zero, the calculation of this four-point function simplifies, and you just get an overall factor called the Liouville action times some power of the partition function on a single copy. Okay, And the Louisville action is something which doesn't depend on any details of the CFT. It has an overall factor of the central charge, and then it has some remaining function, which will be determined entirely by the structure of the permutations. Okay? So in particular, in the replica limit, this n times k just becomes equal to 1. So all you're left with for minus log of the fidelity is the central charge times some universal function of the cross ratio, which will not depend on any details of which CFT you have. Okay, so in principle, it should be possible to just use this expression to find if we could evaluate this Louisville action and analytically continue all of these parameters, then it would be possible to just find the value of the fidelity for all values of the cross ratio. It turns out that there are some difficulties with doing this, which I won't describe here, but would be happy to talk about later. But instead, we'll do two things. So one is that we'll evaluate this numerically for all values of the cross ratio, and then we'll look at the OPE limits analytically. Okay, so so let me describe our numerical results. So the first thing that we should do is check the universality that I mentioned on the previous slide. So for this, we considered lattice realizations of three different CFTs, which all have different central charges and operator contents. And this plot shows for three different values of lambda, it shows the value of the fidelity. And each of these plots, it might be hard to see, is actually three different plots corresponding to the three different models, but they collapse together extremely well. So the fidelity does depend on lambda, but then for each value of lambda, it's just the same function in any 2D CFT. And then I didn't explicitly discuss the relative entropies, but we can also look at a one-parameter generalization of the relative entropy called these alpha NE entropies, which are defined in this way. And you can give a similar expression for them in terms of twist operators, and also see that for any value of alpha, this d alpha divided by c is the same function of the cross ratio for all CFTs. Okay. So this is shown for the actual relative entropy, which is the alpha going to one limit of this quantity in this plot, that all the curves collapse together again. And it's also possible to show that the trace distance is a function only of the central charge and the cross ratio, although in that case, the C dependence doesn't just factor out. Okay, so now that we have the value of this quantity at all values of the cross ratio, we can compare it to the lower bound from the conditional mutual information. So I mentioned these bounds in the beginning, and let me state them more precisely. There are two versions of the bound. So one is in terms of the maximum value of the fidelity over all possible lambda, which for our case just turned out to be at lambda equal to zero. And you can also define an average of log of the fidelity with some explicit probability measure, which I haven't written down. And for both of these, you can show that minus log of the fidelity is upper bounded by the conditional mutual information over two. So an upper bound on minus log of the fidelity is a lower bound on the fidelity. And we want to see how well this is saturated or not. And we find that both of the bounds are not saturated. But interestingly, at small eta, the behavior of the average seems to track the mutual information pretty closely. It seems to differ by an overall constant. And the maximum at lambda equal to zero has a qualitatively different behavior. Okay, so let me list sort of what behaviors we find in the eta going to one and eta going to zero limits. So the conditional mutual information, just from its formula, is given by this expression. So all three quantities in the eta going to one limit will diverge, which indicates that in this limit, by various measures, the states rho and rho tilde are very different from each other, which makes sense because we're trying to reconstruct rho tilde by using a very small region B compared to the actual sizes of A and C. Anyway, so you have this divergence, and you have a slightly different form of the divergence in the three quantities. And in particular, this coefficient in the fidelity is smaller than the conditional mutual information, so the bound is not saturated. And we'll be able to explain these behaviors of the fidelity and the relative entropy using the OPE expansion. And in fact, that will also allow us to relate the order one contributions here to some other entanglement quantities, some of which are it's not entirely obvious why they should appear. So I'll mention this later. And then in the eta going to zero limit, we can again look at the behaviors of these different quantities. So just by expanding this, we can see that the conditional mutual information is linear. But the behavior of the fidelity at lambda equal to zero is quadratic, and the average is linear, similar to the conditional mutual information. And then we also looked at the relative entropy at lambda equal to zero, which is again quadratic, similar to the fidelity. But one somewhat surprising thing is that while in this limit we're able to explain everything using the replica trick, in this case we actually get an answer which doesn't agree with the numerics. Okay, so I will explain this more in a little bit. So so let's discuss how we would study the OPE limits of this quantity. So first, let's consider the eta going to one limit. So again, this is when we're taking the intervals A and C to be really close to each other. And in particular, when eta is strictly equal to one, then the region B disappears completely. So then the state rho ABC just becomes rho AC for two adjacent intervals A and C, and rho tilde becomes rho A tensor rho C. Okay, so we know that this fidelity between two such states for adjacent intervals A and C should just vanish in the continuum limit. And so we also expect that the fidelity should approach zero as eta approaches one, and we would like to find the way in which it approaches zero. So in order to do this, in this limit, we're taking these two operators close to each other. So we want to use their OPE. And you can write down the OPE expansion in a standard way. It has these various factors. And the key thing that we want to find to deduce what the leading powers should be is identify what are the first few operators that appear in the OPE of these two twist operators. Okay. So because these two twist operators are not inverses of each other, they have some overall effect, which can be seen by composing them. And so as a result, for instance, the identity operator will not appear in the OPE. And any operator which appears in the OPE has to reproduce this overall twist at infinity. Okay. So the simplest operator which does this, and the one with the lowest dimension, is just sigma tau C inverse tau A. And again, because we know what tau A and tau C are, we can work out what this permutation is, and we can use its cycle structure to see its dimension, which turns out to be C over 9 in the replica limit. And we can also argue that because this quantity is universal, the next contribution in the OPE should come from a certain fractional mode of the stress tensor acting on this operator, and its dimension goes to C over 9 plus 2/3. Okay, so this gives us a prediction for how this quantity should behave in that OPE limit, and we can check this numerically, and it turns out to agree very well in each of the CFTs. Okay, and then we can actually go further, so we can look at this coefficient B0. So this is defined as some combination of the different OPE coefficients appearing in this quantity. So here, 2 and 3 refer to the operators which were inserted at the points x2 and x3, and so on. Anyway, so we can, so we started by taking some entanglement quantity and then expressing it as a four-point function of twist operators. But we can also invert that reasoning and start with some three-point function of twist operators, such as the one corresponding to this OPE, and express it back in terms of the density matrix. Okay. So when you do this, you find that one of the factors appearing here is just related to this quantity for two adjacent intervals R and S. Okay. So it's related to the fidelity of the product state between R and S, the product state between rho R and rho S with the full state rho R S for two adjacent intervals. And it kind of makes sense that this quantity should appear in the OPE limit of this quantity, because as we discussed, the states rho ABC and rho tilde ABC are reducing to rho AC and rho A times rho C. Okay, but then you can also look at this remaining factor, and this can also be identified as something which has this complicated form. And for this quantity, it's not really sure why it appears or what it means. But one simple observation we can make about it is that if you consider a product state, so you forget about the original state, but you just see how this quantity behaves for the case where rho rs is rho r times rho s, then it just reduces to one. Okay, so it seems at least conceivable that the log of this quantity is some measure of entanglement, although, in what sense that's true and why it appears here is not so clear. Okay, and then one thing that we can check numerically also is that that you can independently evaluate these quantities numerically and then compare the constant B0 that you get from doing that to the actual constant B0 that you get from fitting, and they agree precisely. Okay, so that tells us that this whole procedure is justified. So in the eta going to one limit, we understood what was going on pretty well. So now let me describe something that we don't understand as well, but which uses almost the same techniques. Okay, so in this limit, the conditional mutual information vanishes. So from the general lower bound that I mentioned, this tells us that the fidelity should approach one. And then we can use similar logic to identify what is the leading twist operator that appears in the OPE. And in this case, its dimension goes to zero in the replica limit. So that tells us that the value of the fidelity is approaching a constant. And then we can use similar tricks of identifying what the OPE coefficient is in terms of density matrices to see that the value of that constant is just equal to the trace of some density matrix, so it's equal to one. Okay, so we're able to reproduce the behavior in the strict eta equal to zero limit correctly. But somehow we can also use the reasoning here to say that all the other OPE coefficients, except for this leading one, should vanish in the replica limit. Okay, and the way that we do this is by showing that the same OPE coefficients, which contribute to the fidelity, will also contribute to this other quantity, where instead of the last two permutations, I've replaced them with some reflected version of these permutations to make some correlation function. Okay, so the same OPE coefficients appear in this, but you can also read off what this becomes in the replica limit in terms of the density matrix, and this is just equal to the trace of rho ABC, which has to be equal to one, and there should be no corrections to this, which suggests that all the OPE coefficients have to vanish, and this would mean that they also that also all the corrections to the fidelity vanish in this limit. So if we didn't have the numerical result, then we would have looked at this and concluded that the fidelity approaches, or minus log of the fidelity approaches zero faster than any power of eta in this limit. And that would be somewhat similar to the behavior of the negativity in a similar limit. But we saw very clear quadratic behavior of this quantity numerically. So this suggests that somehow something is going wrong in this procedure where we first took the OPE limit and then analytically continued. In principle, the right thing to do is to first find the analytic continuation and then expand for small eta. And apparently that doesn't commute with this procedure for some reason. So this would be good to understand better. And one thing we checked is that exactly the same issue appears in all of these alpha Reni entropies. So it doesn't seem to be specific to the fidelity. Okay. So finally I want to discuss some more. So we understood the quantitative aspects of the differences between rho and rho tilde from various measures, and we compared to the lower bound from the conditional mutual information. But it would be good to understand exactly where these differences are coming from, or what is actually different between these states. Okay, so for this purpose, so one thing we can note just from the definition of this rho tilde is that its reduced density matrices on A and B, on A and BC, are always the same as those of the original state. Okay, but in general, the reduced density matrices on AB and AC are different between rho and rho tilde. So this means that there could be some change in the correlations between A and B and between A and C ongoing between these states. And the first thing we can look at is what is the change in correlations between A and B between these states? One thing we can show just in general is that that the mutual information between A and B in rho tilde will always be smaller than that in rho. So there's some loss of correlations under this procedure of constructing rho tilde. And we can evaluate this using a replica trick similar to the other measures that I mentioned. And we find that this quantity is also UV finite and universal. And this is not so surprising because we already concluded that somehow rho tilde was able to capture the large amount of short distance entanglement between A and B. Okay, but now we can look at how this quantity behaves in the eta going to one limit. So recall that this is the limit where B is vanishing and A and C are becoming much larger. And so naively we would have thought that in this limit, because there is no system B anymore, this difference should just be equal to zero. But it turns out that it actually approaches a non-zero constant. Okay, and it seems like this is happening because of a competition between two effects where you'll recall that all the distance measures between rho and rho tilde were diverging in this limit. And at the same time, the region B is vanishing. So somehow from the competition of these two effects, you end up with some non-zero constant value of this difference in mutual information. We can see this analytically using this twist operator formalism. We can also see numerically. So we evaluated this delta IAB in both the free fermion CFT and the Ising CFT, which both have the same central charge. And as a result of that, we see that they have exactly the same plot for delta IAB. And it's gradually increasing as you increase eta, and it goes to some constant value. Okay. So then the other thing you can look at is the difference in mutual informations between A and C in these two states. And as you recall, my original question was about correlations between A and C, which are not mediated by B. And so it seems like this quantity is actually the better one to study if that is our question, because in going from rho to rho tilde, we seem to change the correlations both between A and B and between A and C. And the distance between rho and rho tilde is capturing both of these things. Okay, so if we want to understand the change, the correlations between A and C that are mediated by B, then this difference is probably the better thing to study. Okay, so this also turns out to be UV finite, but it's not a universal quantity, and it depends on the operator content of the theory. So for instance, these are the two plots for the free fermion and Ising CFTs, and they're different from each other. But in the limit where eta goes to zero to one, it does have a universal divergence, which we can find by similar methods. And the divergence in this case turns out to be exactly the same as that of the conditional mutual information. But in any case, this is telling us that in this limit, there seem to be a large amount of correlations between A and C that are not captured by rho tilde, which suggests that they might be of this direct, like pure state or Bell pair type between A and C. Okay? And then we can also consider this difference in the mutual informations between A and C in the limit of small eta. So this is when the intervals are very far apart. And we find that it has some leading non-universal power law, which is eta to the power of one plus two times the dimension of the lowest dimension operator. This is different from the leading behavior of the mutual information between A and C in this limit, which is just given by, the power is just given by two times the dimension of the lowest dimension operator. Okay, so what this is telling us is that the leading behavior of the conditional mutual information, the leading behavior of the mutual information between A and C in this limit agrees exactly between rho and rho tilde. So rho tilde is able to capture all the correlations corresponding to this leading behavior of the mutual information that are present in rho. Okay, and this gives us a picture that that these correlations are actually mediated through the region B because we're able to reproduce them just by acting with this series of operations. So there seems to be not just some quantitative change in the correlations as we go from the near interval to the far interval limit, but there's also this qualitative change that now they're mediated by this intermediate region. Okay, and another thing we can look at is the behavior of this difference in mutual information between A and B in the eta going to zero limit. And we find that it's linear in eta, and it seems to be quite a bit larger than the difference in mutual information between A and C. So somehow in the small eta limit, most of the difference between the states rho and rho tilde is coming from differences in AB rather than in AC. Okay, so those are most of the results that I wanted to mention. And maybe I can mention one more thing that I think is interesting. So the bounds that I discussed so far are just for any quantum information theoretic setup, and we calculated both sides of them for the 2D CFT. But there are also some bounds on the same conditional mutual information quantity, which are specific to relativistic QFTs. Okay, and this is the C theorem, which is often interpreted as monotonicity under RG flows. But in terms of entanglement entropies, it's just this statement. That if you look at the entanglement entropy of region R and take its derivative and multiply by R, then this quantity is always decreasing as you increase the size of the region R. Okay, and you can rewrite this inequality in the following form. So it can be expressed in terms of second derivatives of the entropy, and then you can notice that the second derivative can be written as this combination of entropies. In particular, if you consider, so this combination can just be seen as the conditional mutual information in this setup where you have some interval R and then you have two intervals A and C of size delta, which is much smaller than R on each side. Okay, so just by the definition, this is the conditional mutual information in this setup. And we're seeing that it's greater than or equal to something which is non-zero, which is just whatever this is. Okay, but we know that the C theorem is a statement which applies in any relativistic QFT. But in particular, it's saturated in a CFT. And so this is telling us that the C theorem inequality is a stronger statement than the general inequality that we considered here, which is not saturated. Okay, so one question might be whether there's some stronger version of the QI inequality which does coincide with the C theorem and which is saturated in the CFT. Okay, and then some further questions besides various puzzles that I mentioned in the course of the talk are whether we can identify some holographic dual of this quantity, like either the log of the fidelity or the relative entropy. We know how these quantities behave on the CFT side in the vacuum state in the OPE limits. So, you know, one approach might be to try to identify some quantity in the bulk in ADS3, which has similar behaviors. And it seems like this should be, because the state rho tilde is constructed from the entanglement wedges of AB and B and BC, it seems like if there was a holographic dual, it would capture something about the entanglement wedge of ABC, which doesn't lie within these regions. And then, as we saw, this difference in the fidelity, the fidelity between rho and rho tilde captures more information than just the conditional mutual information. So we can ask if it can help us understand the multipartite entanglement structure in other setups, such as topological phases or states created from non-equilibrium dynamics, where again, the states have some interesting long-range correlations. And then there are other interesting information theory questions about what is the general class of states where the QI inequality is saturated when the conditional mutual information is non-zero? And do they have some special structure? Thank you.
Great. We have some questions for Shreya.
So I think that I, on one of your slides, you mentioned that the fidelity is maximized for lambda equals zero. Is that right?
Yeah.
So there's no lambda. So one of the puzzling features of these universal recovery results is the need to maximize or optimize over lambda. And as far as I know, we don't know that that's necessary. It's just a feature of the proof. So I was wondering if you're able to offer any insight as to why in this case lambda wasn't necessary.
That's a really good question, and we're hoping that at least this provides one example where in some universal setting you can look at different values of lambda. Unfortunately, because of the issues that I mentioned with the OPE limit, eta going to zero, we're not able to explain. So the lambda dependence in the eta going to zero limit that we observe numerically, as I mentioned, the average has a different power law than the maximum. The maximum was quadratic and the average is linear. And if you look at the dependence on lambda for different values of lambda, the power law changes as a function of lambda and seems to decrease as you increase lambda. So the problem is that we're not really able to use analytic continuation in that limit to say anything at all. Like according to this discussion, it seems like there should be no power law at all. So we're not able to really explain that. So it's just an observation, you know.
That was very interesting. Thanks, Shreya. I have two very quick questions. Mm-hmm. One is this fact that your fidelity replica trick for the replicated PETS map has a genus zero covering surface, mm-hmm. that would not still be true if these were not adjacent intervals?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
One other setup that we consider, though, is you can take four intervals, four adjacent intervals, and then do like a multiple step recovery process. So in the first step, you can act non-trivially from B to BC. In the second step, you can act from C to CD, and you can look at the fidelity for that process, and then that is also, now it's some five-point function, but it's also universal.
Yeah, you're just sewing a bunch of cylinders, so I guess. But the you said that you couldn't do the uniformization to get the exact Liouville factor. Is that something that there's a fundamental obstruction to, or is it just really hard?
So maybe I should say more about that. So what we do is, So you need to evaluate the covering map for doing that for this four-point function. And you can look at the cycle structures of these permutations and try to evaluate the covering map. And what you can do in general is write down some, so we wrote down some parameterization for the covering map, but it has some poles at certain locations. And in order to determine the location of the poles, you have to solve a certain equation for the location of the pole. And that is a polynomial equation, and its degree increases with these ni, mi, et cetera. And so it seems like you just can't find an analytic solution to that. So I don't know if there's something clever you can do to still come up with a covering map, but as far as we know, it seems like, not obvious at all how you could do that.
So you mentioned there is some problem with commuting the replica limit with the OPE limit. Do you see something that is specifically causing these two limits to not commute?
I guess, so we don't know how to do the calculation in the other order. Like, we don't know how to actually do the replica limit first and then take the OPE limit because of this issue that I just mentioned with computing the Louisville action. So we're not able to find a very, it would be nice to have even another explicit example where something like this happens, like some explicit function you can write down where you see this kind of non-commutation. But we haven't really been able to come up with something explicit. But this is one of the things that we should definitely understand better.
Well, okay. If I understand, if I remember correctly, the leading behavior of leading contribution to conditional mutual information just comes from bipartite entanglement between A and C. Is that correct?
Are you referring to the result that I mentioned?
The leading contribution.
Sorry. So I shouldn't have said conditional mutual information there. I was just referring to the mutual information between A and C and the far interval limit. It seems like it comes from correlations which are mediated by B because you're able to get the same correlations in the state rho tilde.
Correlation mediated by B contributes to the
contributes to the mutual information in the far interval limit.
Okay, so if I perturb the bulk field close to the region B, then it influences very largely to the conditional mutual information. So I was wondering if I place some bulk excitation close to the region B and try to move the locational excitation deep into the bulk, and how that contribution to the conditional mutual information changes according to the location. And I was wondering if there is any relation to the entanglement wedge of the region.
So for the bulk tube, we don't have anything precise yet. That would be interesting to understand. I guess you could ask the same question even in the CFT, like if you perturb the state a little bit in the region B, then does that change the correlations between A and C a lot? And we didn't study that question explicitly, but maybe that is a good thing to look at.
Okay, thank you.
I wanted to understand this slide with the C-theorem. So the C-theorem inequality is just strong subadditivity, but the conditional mutual information inequality is some strengthening of strong subadditivity. So
Right. So the C-theorem inequality is just strong subadditivity, but it's strong subadditivity applied to is strong subadditivity applied to this setup with in the case where these two regions on either side are null? And then when you apply just the strong subadditivity inequality to that setup and use relativistic invariance, then you're able to derive a stronger lower bound on the conditional mutual information for the setup where you have intervals on a spatial slice. Does that make sense? So from applying strong subadditivity in the setup, you end up with you end up with this inequality. Then you can rewrite that as something in terms of the second derivative. Then you can identify this combination of entropies as a conditional mutual information for the intervals on a spatial slice.
Okay, so in that way, it could be stronger than the conditional.
Yeah, so somehow this is using relativistic invariance, and then nothing about this was using relativistic invariance. Mm-hmm. So apparently it's that statement is stronger.
Great. Before thanking Shreya, just to mention, there's a virtual coffee break on Gathertown and a hologram Lenny Susskind, hopefully over here, and a coffee break. So thanks very much. Thanks, Shreya.